Neil Atkinson with 50-50 football this week. Been a big week in the Premier League, and we're going to be talking to Paul Dehaney to talk about Tottenham Hotspur. We're also going to be talking to Bradley Hayden to talk about Watford. But before all that, we're going to talk to Steve Armstrong about the result that has blown the title race right open. But that's looking at it from a Chelsea or Spurs perspective. From a Man United perspective, Steve, what for me, the prevailing image of the weekend between Ander Herrera playing brilliantly, between three or four other fantastic things Man United did throughout the game, but it was the United manager walking off, tapping to the badge on his shirt that was played on Match of the Day last night. That sort of stayed with me in terms of, you get the feeling that he really wanted that one for himself, for his club, to make a point. It wasn't as though it was in doubt anyway, but it's very much the crowning. Jose Mourinho is most definitely now the most Man United manager this season.
Yeah, I think so. I think when we first chatted this season about Mourinho at United, I sort of talked about this sort of spiritual home possibility where he could have actually been this sort of tortured, wandering soul who's never quite managed to find himself at peace anywhere. And then, you know, this was the stage where he was most likely to find that because he was going to be surrounded by like-minded people, a like-minded club. And he's done it a few times, but obviously I think he's done it more in resilient failure in other games this season as opposed to, you know, being able to actually have something to shout about. So, yeah, it was quite an iconic image. And, you know, the support he's had from the club and from the players and, you know, even through some pretty, I don't want to say dark times because they're very, very far from it, but there's been a lot of frustrating times, particularly at Old Trafford this season. So I think it was the first time he was able to do a bit of chest pumping, and of course to do so. So yeah, I think you've got a point.
I just think it was just a real sort of, this one's this one's for all of us moment, and I think it's what he's needed because United haven't been playing badly. They've been playing really well, being unbeaten in the league for as long as they have been. You know, even the League Cup, you know, didn't quite feel like a thing. But now we were sitting around yesterday after watching Liverpool play West Brom, and I was talking to a couple of people there. I was talking to Phil Blundell, and one of the things that me and Phil were both saying was that looking slightly ahead to next season, United are actually playing really quite well. When you break it down, you don't be unbeaten for that time without doing that, and already with one eye on next season, maybe prematurely, but I'm looking at it thinking United are really going to be, they're going to be a real sight to watch next season. They've got as much chance as anybody else, I'd say, of winning the league next year.
I think, listen, you've not heard any dissent coming out of United support at any point during all of them boring, tedious draws that we've had at Old Trafford, because people saw, you know, progress. They saw a standard of football that was a level up from what we've seen since Ferguson left. But there's been no dissent really coming out of the support, you know, and even in that period where we were just anchored in sixth and not budging despite winning about 15 games on the spin, nobody was moaning. So, you know, people could see what was coming together, and, you know, I think it's taking him a while to work out, how do I get some of these pieces of this massive jigsaw I've got into the right places to make this picture up. And slowly but surely he's starting to do that. So I think, you know, I think it's obvious now who's not on his wanted list in terms of who's already at the club. And I think it's pretty obvious who is on his wanted list from outside the club. And he's going to make those changes that will hopefully turn United into a force. But the one thing that's gone right under the radar for me, just, you know, when United have been getting all this critique about not converting chances, even with what you've not actually classed as a brilliant defence, we've actually got an unbelievably good defensive record that stacks up against anybody across, you know, across Europe, with the exception of getting turned over massively by Chelsea, who just had one of those days where everything went in. United, even in defeat, have never really been blasted by anybody. So, you know, the usual successful sides, you do sort of see that they've started from the back and worked upwards. And I think he seems to have found himself quite happy now with Marcus Rojo and Eric Bailly, who was a pair I think have clicked as a real partnership. And the relief in the support that we're just not watching, you know, the catastrophes that are Phil Jones and Chris Smalling every week. We've got two players there who not only look like they can play a bit and defend a bit, but also two people who, you know, can stick it in amongst anybody. I mean, you know, Diego Costa yesterday, who's the ultimate snide in football, got an absolute schooling from Rojo yesterday. He got as good as he could have got. And, you know, it takes a lot to out-snide Diego Costa, but Rojo managed to do it perfectly well yesterday. So, and then obviously you've got the Valencia situation on the other side. He looks like he's back in his youth again and can't do anything wrong. And we've got competition now because Luke Shaw's got himself back in the favour. And interestingly, with Matty Adamian suddenly seems to have played pretty well as well. So, you know, he seems to have settled on what he's back four or five look like. And then I think he's at peace with that. And I think he's even at peace with the fact that he can turn around to De Gea and say, you're not going to mess around with me, son. You know, none of this dangling the Madrid carrot. You know, you're either staying or you don't, because I'm quite happy with Sergio Romero as backup, and I'll prove it to you by, you know, you step out of line and I'll stick him in ahead of you. So I think he seems a lot more at peace with how solid United are now. And now he's just got to add that little bit of sparkle in the midfield and up front that's gonna kick United onto the level that you're suggesting. I don't think the gap between top and fifth or sixth in the Premiership is anything like to the levels it was over the years. There's normally been sort of one side who's sort of head and shoulders above, and then somebody who just goes on the chase. But I do think the gap between the top, and the results have proven that this season, I do think the gap between top and sort of fifth or sixth is as tight as it's been for a long time, which I think helps the case for United to get back into there, into that kind of sphere next year. But I think the other thing, the feel good factor, we've got a trophy on the board, we're in a decent position to go on and maybe go into the semi-finals of the Europa League now. So I think people are starting to just rally round and think there's some good times ahead for United, and that always helps.
I think it's when you mentioned in there, you mentioned Rocco there as doing some excellent snides, and I think one of the things I've seen right the way through the season, I still remember, and it was curious at the time in that I remember the sheer exuberance of Rocco, especially the Ibrahimovic equaliser when Liverpool went to United, in terms of the fact that how much he wanted it. And I think it was, you know, that was the focus on, we don't want to lose to these. You know, it seemed it was a funny game after that equaliser went in, really, but it very much felt like United had sort of gone, you know, they just didn't want to lose that game. And now it's sort of shifting it into winning more, I'd say. And, you know, you mentioned Rocco there, the other one as well, who just seems to love playing for Manchester United and does a brilliant job at it, Herrera. And the through ball yesterday for Rashford's opener, I mean, Rashford takes it really, really well, but the ball's just dropped it gorgeous. I think the way he curls it into his path, it's perfectly weighted, perfectly paced. And looking at Herrera, if he starts to add that to everything else that he's doing all over the pitch, the way in which he runs around, wins his battles, and is horrible to play against, and the sort of player that opposing fans despise, which therefore means he's the sort of player that you and I love, Steve, is he's going to be a real handful next season as well.
Yeah, it is. I totally agree with you. And he seems to have, we always envisioned Herrera being that kind of fella who's just off the front two, or even part of the front two. What Mourinho seems to have turned him into is somebody who's now got the potential to do what Carrick has done at the club for sort of 10, 11 years, and that's do those kind of passes forward, unlock defences, but also can do the, you know, I'm going to act almost sweeper like, and be the person who does some of the real dog end work. And I think that's something that a lot of United fans are starting to get quite excited about, because ultimately one of the biggest things that's hung over United for the last three or four seasons is the fact that we've spent near enough, you know, probably £500 million or something stupid like that trying to replace Michael Carrick. And most people still seem to think that the best midfielder at United is Michael Carrick. So I think it's nice, and we've always sat here sitting here thinking, well, it's pretty obvious that Carrick, now that, you know, he's got his testimonial, it happens to be at the end of the season, not at the start of next, which suggests that he's going to be on his way. It's nice to know that maybe Herrera is, and has been kind of groomed into being the person that Mourinho sees capable of filling that role, that void, and doing that type of shift on the pitch. So, you know, the pass you mentioned yesterday, in typical Herrera form, there was some snidiness involved at the outset, because I think when he first picked it up, I think he handballed it and got away with it, which is just proper Herrera, you know, snide and then brilliant, all in the space of a couple of seconds. But I think he's got a good future ahead at United, and I think a lot of people are starting to see a lot more about what Herrera's about. Which ultimately is what we expected when we signed him. So that's a good sign, no shadow of a doubt.
Interesting front two yesterday. He went with Rashford and Lingard. Ibrahimovic, I think it suited him to keep him back for the European game at this stage of the season coming up. Come on to that in a minute. But front two worked really well together. It's the exciting young footballers, and also that he, you know, clearly decided he was getting after Chelsea with two up top and with tons and tons of pace, and just looking to turn them round, really. I think that's, you know, again, it's not, yeah, we, we, I think he can sometimes overstate what football managers do in terms of sort of tactical decisions and actors, though. You know, that's not a, it's not Rinus Michels, this sort of stuff. He's just thought, how do I make their lives very, very difficult? But he's been brave enough to go with it. I think, again, coming back to Mourinho settling at the club, Steve, you know, he's brave enough there to go with Rashford and Lingard. And it shows the faith he's got in those two as well. He's to go with those two and put his faith in them in a game like that, you know, 4 o'clock on the telly, it's a big deal.
Well, I'll tell you why it was brave as well, because ultimately it was brave in the sense of the size of the game in terms of the opposition. But, you know, bear in mind Mourinho, no one likes getting beat by their old club, and he's been beat twice this season already, and he probably didn't want a third. So I think it was brave from that point of view. I sort of said on our podcast prior to the game that it's going to be interesting to see what he does with Thursday in mind, because I think if United had walked away from Belgium sort of 3 or 4 of the good and the tie's technically over and all you've got to look forward to is a dead rubber on Thursday. It'd have been interesting to see what would have happened then with Mkhitaryan, Ibrahimovic, Martial. And it's almost like he's potentially found almost by accident his best side yesterday, the type of team we were going to get stuck in at Chelsea. It's a really similar game. If you go back and have a look at the past, if you remember when Arsenal came and United ended that, I think it was that 49 game unbeaten run, and they came at Old Trafford and a fairly young, pacey, quite exuberant United side just kicked Arsenal all over the place and battled left, right and centre to a 2-0 win. And yesterday I had that sense about it. I mean, you know, that was the game Phil Neville just went around plattering people for fun and dominated the whole game. And there was an element of yesterday that sort of matched that for me. And, you know, one thing you get also, and I don't know if it came across at the telly, you know, but Old Trafford was absolutely bouncing yesterday. And when you've got pace, you know, early doors pace, and then a few tackles go flying, and all of a sudden the crowd get up for it, and everything suddenly changes. The whole dynamic of, you know, opposition players start bricking it, away fans start getting quiet, and, you know, within 10 minutes of yesterday, United had broken Chelsea's heart, and, you know, that's something that I think, whether he found it by luck or by judgment, the reality is he found it, and I think it's given a few more players a bit of food for thought, you know, because the other thing is Ibrahimovic must probably be the most unpopular 30 goal of the season man that's probably ever played in the Premier League, because as much as he bangs in these goals and people love the swagger about it, no one's really actually enjoyed watching United when he's been part of the side, because he slows the play right down. There's some games where that works perfectly, particularly away from home, where you're sort of playing that five-man midfield, one up front. But I think when it comes to Old Trafford, the expectation is that United are going to absolutely be flinging kitchen things at everybody. And he's been sort of seen as somebody who hasn't helped with that. That front two of Rashford yesterday. I mean, Rashford's actually played all right, but he just needed a goal. He didn't score from September. And then you could just tell the world, you know, the goal he scored away the other week as Sunderland did in the absolute world of good. And yesterday was, without a doubt, the most exceptional performance he's put in a United shirt since he came in at the side. So, it was a good day for him.
Other noticeable decisions that he makes yesterday and players in general who have got strange Man United careers. He picks Ashley Young, who seems to be his go-to man for reliability, and he's not the first manager who's had that sort of attitude. And he picks captain leader legend Marouane Fellaini, gets him on the pitch there. And, you know, again, Fellaini's had a really useful season for United. I've been watching from afar sort of at times, thinking I wouldn't mind Liverpool being able to bring someone like that on late in games and all that sort of stuff. He appears to have a sort of an all-purpose use for Mourinho. He's got no matter what the game situation is, it appears that Mourinho's going to feel quite relaxed asking him to do something.
Yeah, that's been said before. He's
a good player.
He's a Mourinho type of player. And I was at what Fellaini, you'd describe him as quite unique in the sense of you're not going to find too many players if you go hunting down for, we need somebody who's just going to be snide, hard work, occasionally be able to chest the ball down and then give it to somebody who's actually all right at doing stuff with it. You know, he's quite unique in that sense, and he's an absolute handful in certain games. And I think he's one of those players who, in certain situations, he's absolutely the ideal person for it. And I can point to 2 or 3 times where Liverpool have not got results against United because Liverpool just simply couldn't deal with Fellaini. I think you're right on that. And he does his job. He does his job well. He gets quite a lot of bad press because of how he's sort of seen, and, you know, he's a bit awkward, he's a bit clumsy, and he's perhaps not in the United way. But, you know, there's a room for him in the squad. type of game these days. And I think we've said before, the first person more often than not to get called on when United need to tighten it up or when United need a bit of muscle and a bit of physique put into the game is Fellaini. And, you know, I think you used the word go-to man before. I think Mourinho looks at Fellaini sometimes as his go-to man for certain situations, and more often than not, it does tend to pay off. And something else I said though yesterday, bringing him into that equation, I think yesterday was the first game this season where you could have gone through the whole United team and not put anything less than 7 out of 10 next to every player, and that makes one hell of a difference. We've had throughout the season people who've had sort of 8, 9 out of 10 games, but when you surround you by fives and sixes, usually in defence when Jones and Smalling are inside, it becomes very, very difficult to get too much out of a game. And, you know, you end up drawing games that you should have probably won. But once everybody hits 7 out of 10, Dennis Irwin style, and everybody does their job, you'd expect then someone like Mourinho's tactics to work. And the difference yesterday was the lowest you could have graded any United player was 7 out of 10, and Chelsea had a pitch full of fives. Mm. And that made a big difference.
Last thing then, looking ahead to the Thursday night, it's a decent result away in the away leg. The 1-1 against Anderlecht gives you something to build on, and also the missed chances as well. So I think it suggests that, you know, expecting the United to prove they're the better side. And then it becomes the last four, where it looks like Ajax and Lyon will probably be there. Celta Vigo could go either way. It's a competition that's opening up for United, really, isn't it? It's not quite the level of sides that were in it last season. Doesn't make it any less worth winning at this stage. It'd be a lovely end to the season.
Mate, I've watched United win every single thing in the world by this trophy, and it would mean so, so much after years and years checking round to see United get a complete set of trophies. So it's always meant a lot, and I've said it a number of times. You know, this is a club who lost one of its greatest ever sides in pursuit of European glory, and I get really wound up and quite animated about it when people diss the tournament and the quality of the tournament. It means a lot, I think, to the club, and I think it means huge, huge amounts to Mourinho as well, because, it's a good opportunity. And when you're trying to follow in the footsteps of, you know, it's difficult for any Liverpool manager trying to follow in the steps of things that Shankly did, Paisley did, etc. And it's the same for United and Busby and Ferguson. But Mourinho, in his first season, he has got the chance to do something that neither of them ever did, and that's win what is the UEFA Cup. So I think it matters a lot to him and a lot of players at the club as well, completing sets of medals. That's what they always like to do. I think the result the other night, I was actually quite wound up about the result in the end, because I thought United... And you could almost draw a parallel to it yesterday. United had to go up a couple of levels yesterday to win that game of football, because they were playing the supposed champions-elect. United played to a level below that against Anderlecht, because they saw them as cannon fodder, and played with a complacency and an arrogance that really wound me up. And you'd think after about 10 or 12 times this season where we've been caught out late by not winning games and finishing them off, you think we'd have learned that lesson, and we didn't the other night, and that really sort of bugged me a little bit. So, you know, the result wasn't bad, but the actual performance, and I think the mindset and the professionalism of some of those players wasn't to the standard that I expected. I think United, hopefully on Thursday night, will do a job there and put that to bed, and hopefully, as you say, get into a semi-final of a tournament that, you know, not only should they be winning, they've been favourites for winning it for probably the best part of the last 2 months or so now. They've been sort of, you know, right at the top of the betting for quite a while. So it's not just us who expect it, I think, quite rightly. So the bookies across the board expect United to win that tournament. You know, I think when you do get to this level, Anderlecht was probably the best draw United could have had. But there are some good teams still left in that tournament, and I think if United aren't at their best, should they get through the tie on Thursday night, if United aren't at their best, whoever they play in the semi-final, they're going to end up getting rolled over. So I think, you know, that's something United have got to be careful of.
Okay, excellent stuff as ever from Steve. I'm going to shoot over now. He's just literally walked into the studio to chat away to Paul Dehaney and have a chat to him about Spurs. Very quickly, Steve, just before I do let you go, you still have the view, I suspect, because you are an arch pragmatist who's been around the block often enough, that the idea of a top four push for United needs one of Liverpool and City to fall over and United to do something practically perfect. You'd still think the most likely route in is through the Europa League, isn't it?
United have got to keep this running. People, it's doable if you have a kind fixture running and you've got some good games. to go out where they're all winnable. I would expect at some point, you can't see, I think United have to almost pretty much win every game. I think Liverpool personally are, I think they're playing too well now to not be doing well and getting in there. So I can't see Liverpool dropping out. I actually think City are in a bit of form as well now. So I think it'd be very, very difficult to see either of them having the kind of collapse that you'll need for United, who've got a running of City away, Arsenal away, Tottenham away, and Southampton away, and even Burnley away, who aren't easy away from home. You just can't see it. So, I'd just sack it off completely and just throw all the eggs into winning that trophy and
beat City away.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do. That'll be nice. That one, yeah.
Could help everybody. Always great to speak to Steve Armstrong in on 50-50 Football. I'm going to shoot over now and speak to Paul Dehaney about Spurs. Joined now by Paul Dehaney, Steve Armstrong there, talking about Manchester United, who did themselves and Chelsea and Spurs an enormous favour and beating Chelsea yesterday. And 4 points, Paul, 6 games to go, same number of games played, better goal difference. This is now a title race again, and this is now genuinely nerve-wracking stuff from a Tottenham perspective.
Very much so. I mean, I've been saying, the last few times we've talked that the FA Cup was of the utmost importance for me, just because it's a romantic, cup involved with our team, and won it 8 times. And haven't won it for years after is seemingly dominating that competition pre sort of 91. But in the last couple of weeks, all of a sudden, the game's changed. We're winning games and not just winning them. We're winning dominantly. We're playing good from back to front. There's no obvious weaknesses in the team. We've lost some key players in the likes of Danny Rose, Harry Kane for a period, young Harry Winks, who was doing really well for us. And then it doesn't seem to be affecting us. If anything, we seem to be getting stronger. It's quite scary.
It's what you're in for. On the other hand, we can overstate this sort of stuff. It means that the end of the season is going to be absolutely electric. But Chelsea have now dropped points in 2 of the last 4, which, again, really opens it up and makes you think that if Spurs... My worry from a Tottenham perspective is that, there's every chance of the remaining 6, you might need 5 wins if you're going to do it. And that you're already on a winning streak of 7 on exactly. The bounce. And there is a law of diminishing returns thing about this, where sometimes, no matter how well you're playing, that's why Chelsea's run early in the season was so unprecedented. It happens so rarely. Yeah. That'd be the worry, isn't it? That, you're probably looking at having to be able to get to 88 points, 89 points to be able to feel as though it's genuinely on.
Yeah, I might even go one further and say we probably need to win the lot, which would mean, 4 points means Chelsea could draw 2 games and we win the rest of our games. We're champions because of the far superior goal difference. There's endless permutations, but you're right in that. My worry is, normally, I think this is the first time we've won 7 games in a row in 50 years in the top flight, which says its own thing. I think, what did Chelsea go on when they...
13, I think.
13. We'd have to sort of get to the sort of 15 mark, I think, isn't it? Like 14 or 15 in a row. To go the whole season and even then that might not be enough, because then Chelsea might match us. But all I can say is that I'm so proud that not just this season, last season when everybody thought, oh, that was their only chance to win the league and stuff like that, there'll never be another opportunity, even with people spending crazy amounts of money, doing everything, getting the best managers in the world, We're still the ones that are challenging, which makes me so proud. And, as much as people laughed at us last season, said, oh, they bottled it and whatever, out of everyone, we were the only ones actually having a go to challenge Leicester. With all the peoples who have got, or teams that have got riches much more than us, bigger wage budget, I wouldn't say richer owners, because our owner's not too poor himself. But you know what I mean? It's like we've done it kind of organically, and it kind of gives you that a little bit of extra.
No, I think you mentioned last season's interesting now, because I didn't feel as though Spurs bottled it last season. I think the term bottling is used too much in sport, to be honest with you. Sometimes things just don't come off for a sports person or for a football team. So I didn't think that. But what I did think was, it'll be hard to rouse themselves again to go through this again. You've seen loads. No one's, I keep saying it, no one's defended this league this decade. No. And they're obviously not going in this season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so hard to do, to go through the emotional energy, and you saw it at the end of last season. And yeah. Pochettino's referenced it recently about, you know, Spurs. For instance, he's referenced that 2-2 game against Chelsea where there was kicking lumps out of people and all that sort of stuff. He's referenced so that you feel as though there's been an emotional scar there.
Yeah.
And yet, fair play to him and to all of his team. They've picked themselves up. They've put it all back together. And, you know, that regardless of what happens from this point, Spurs are on for a season where they break 85 points here, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, not in my time. I mean, you know, I've been supporting Spurs since I can remember. I'm nearly 50 years old. So I've been through every kind of up and down you can really think of. But not in my time have we come close to winning the league. I mean, I think it was the one in 85 where Everton and Spurs were going for it, but I think we had to play like 12 games in 15 days or something stupid like that with 11 players, you know, or 12 players, and Everton kind of ran away with it in the end. But other than that, I can't really think of any time, you know, other than last season where we've even challenged. So for me, this is all new territory, but, you know, it's great to see, you know, it's just, and the respect we're getting from other teams as well, finally, you know, because I don't really think even, you know, even like up until Christmas, we were still kind of sort of going under the radar.
Oh, very much so. I mean, I for instance, was saying, I don't think Spurs are playing that well, but whenever I see them, they're getting results. Well, now they're getting results and they are playing that well.
Well, that's a good sign, is that, you know, we were grinding out results, particularly in that period when we're in the Champions League, you know. Everyone says that was a time when, you know, Chelsea pulled away because they were winning games, they weren't in Europe. We negotiated the Champions League, we didn't get through, but we weren't losing those games. I think, you know, draw away to West Brom at the time wasn't a bad result. Draw away to Bournemouth at the time, who were playing well when people were conceding goals again, wasn't a bad result. So I almost think we negotiated that period in the league really well because we kept within touching distance of the top four. And then when Europe, that break over Christmas, if you see, I think we lost to Man United in November, and then we just went on a 6-game winning run then. Then we had a little period just after Christmas where we picked up a couple of draws. Man City away, you know, again, no shame in drawing there. And then our last defeat was to you, who, believe me a lot, Liverpool are the only team I've seen this season who have been able, almost like our nemesis, that one team that seemed to be able to know how to play against Tottenham.
Yeah.
Everybody else, with, you know, and at least one of the games, we've managed to roll them over, you know.
Looking at who's impressed, and the other thing that struck me over the last few weeks looking at Spurs is the way in which certain players are coming good at different times. I think that's helped massively. We'll come on to talk about Son in a second, but before him, opening goal scorer at the weekend, Dembele, who I think had a bit of a funny season in that. I think he looked better last season than he has this season. And yet, again, last 5-6 games, he's been looking excellent in the middle of the park. He's looked like the player from last season. He's very much come to the front when he's been required.
I think that before Christmas, what not a lot of people knew, he had a bit of an injury, and it was almost like we were managing that injury. So what was happening is he'd play for sort of 70 minutes, and Harry Winks would come on for 20 minutes or even half an hour. So it's almost like he was nursing him back to full fitness. What's happened in the last 6 or 7 games is that he's been at full throttle, Dembele, and he's finishing games, and he's getting stronger. Same could be said of Dier as well. Dier, I don't know if you remember the Liverpool game. You know, he made a mistake in there, and at the time he was a bit shaky. His confidence looked a bit, but you know, he's sort of come in during Wanyama's absence, who I thought would probably miss. And he's just stepped up and looked just as good. Ben Davis, again, looked shaky against Liverpool. He's been ever-present since then, and he's excelled. We haven't even missed Danny. I haven't even mentioned Danny Rose, who's been my favourite player this season. That's the biggest respect I can pay him.
And Son, turning up with goals exactly when required is just huge. You know, again, and a lot of this, I think, it's worth remembering that, you know, Pochettino's been working with some of these players now for 2 years, some of them for 3 years. And it's, you know, I think we can all do it. All supporters can do it in that, you know, last season, Son, it was a bit, well, what does he do? He's looked tidy at times. It's not like he's not a good player, but what does he do and how does he get his game? And exactly at the minute when he's been called upon this season, he's been almost perfect for Tottenham.
Yeah, he's been great this season. What I like about him, he scores important goals, a bit like Roberto Firmino. You know, he's not prolific, but he scores when you need him to score. What I like recently about him, he's become more of a menace with his pace, his movement, and he almost, like you say, it is down to the manager, because the manager expects you to play a certain way, whoever you are. And I've always said this about Tottenham and about Liverpool, is that the team is more about systems, not about players. So it doesn't matter who you put in there, they should be able to... I mean, you only have to look at Kieran Trippier, you know? Mm. Guy doesn't play for a few weeks, comes in, looks outstanding, yeah. You know? Got to the way that we're playing.
It's the other thing as well is the flexibility that he's shown, before we get on to another couple of individuals, the flexibility that he's shown moving in and out of his back three into his back four throughout the season.
During games,
yeah. Just having a little look and seeing what's going to work for him next and looking to solve problems. But also, again, back to the fact that all those players, for instance, if you look at the lineup for the side against Bournemouth, you know, all those players he's been working with for 2 years now.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got that faith in them, but he's also spent that time with them in order to have that faith in them. Every single player who starts that game against Bournemouth, he's been working with for at least 2 years. Even off the subs, the three subs who come on, he's been working with throughout the course of this season. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting there, the order they come on, you know, Wanyama comes on first. He's the one who's most trusted.
Yeah.
And he's worked with him before as well, yeah, at Southampton. Yeah. You know, it does seem like, you know, this is a team building exercise. And that's what you were trying to say before. It's a team building exercise. That's what it's been for 2 or 3 years. And that's what you're now getting to see.
Yeah. I mean, even under Harry Redknapp, who I love the way that team played football, one of my favourite Spurs teams, just, you know, when you've got Lennon and Bale, Modric, Van der Vaart, these sort of players. It was a fantasy team. But the problem with a team like that was if those players didn't turn up for one day, there wasn't a solid defence to back it up. There wasn't a midfield. You know, we could be 2-0 up in a game and lose 3-2. It could be the other way around.
Yeah.
It was, you didn't know what you was getting. With Pochettino, it's almost like a... I mean, even in that Bournemouth game, I look at that at the weekend, you know, in the old days, it would have gone 2-0 up, and then they would have got a goal back, and then it would have been sort of either we'd have got a third or they'd equalise, and you'd be on panic stations. But at not one point did I feel at threat, because if they did break forward, I knew that, you know, Dyer was going to break it up in the midfield, or Vertonghen was going to make a block, or Alderweireld was going to make a timely interception. So I think there's trust all through the team and in each other.
Yeah.
Which is so important. You know, I don't think there's anyone... I've always looked at Spurs in the past and thought, right, where's our weak link? And let's hope they don't attack him down the right, or let's hope they don't isolate him, or, you know, cut off the supply to the striker. I don't see that. There's always something there, always someone to back up, have someone's back in a battle.
It's huge then, at the weekend.
Mm.
Against Chelsea, FA Cup semi-final. I'm going to get you back in to preview it more thoroughly when we get closer to the time, if you're available. But do you think it's huge? We're thinking more about the league here before than just that game. But do you think it's significant from a league perspective this now? You know, do you almost feel as though if you can beat Chelsea in this semi-final, it lands a certain psychological blow? It says, right, where, you know, it sends a message to Chelsea that how good this Spurs side is. Do you think there will be a knock-on effect from it? Or do you think it's just a one-off game?
I mean... At first, I was thinking that. I was almost thinking it's almost like the biggest game in a few decades for Tottenham, not just because if we lose, then the pressure's on for us not to, you know, it's unlikely that we'd probably win a trophy if, you know, Chelsea go on. But if we win, you know, it's one of those, like, if we win, we still haven't won anything. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't want to put too much importance on it. I think we have to treat it as a one-off game and hope that if we do win, it has a psychological effect. But who's to say we win and then Chelsea don't say, right, now we're going to go and push on and win the
league.
We
roll our sleeves up, yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of them. I don't really want to put too much importance on it. All I would say is normally I'd go into a game against Chelsea in any competition and think with hope more than expectation, just because of the sort of Indian sign they had over us back in the day. But as time's gone on, I almost go into it as an equal. And, you know, if anything, feeling more confident just because of the form we're in. But, you know, I'm not going to be too bullish about this because we are at that point where nothing's been won, and it, you know, heartbreak is still very much on the horizon.
No, I'm not. I just want to be sort of, again, sort of bringing in, I've seen since, you know, 2008, 2009, Liverpool side, two Liverpool sides come close to winning the title, and on both occasions, certainly on the first occasion, run into a juggernaut of a Man United side, possibly, you know, the second year of the best Man United side that Ferguson built, I'd argue, with Tevez, Ronaldo and Rooney all in the same side. And then 13-14 when Liverpool come heartbreakingly close. And one of the things because it's been so long since Liverpool had won a title, you focus on the title. One of the things that I sort of, that now sort of looking back, you regret is not having seen those lads lift a trophy. Yeah, you know what I mean? Lift any trophy because for Tottenham now it'd be 2 years on the bounce where, you know, if you take these two seasons back to back, Spurs have been the best side across the two seasons. I think it's fair to say that. And so, you know, you must be thinking to yourself, you just want to get those lads lifting one trophy. You just want to watch them lift one trophy, definitely, get that one moment. And you know, obviously, I'm sure you'd rather it was the league. If you could pick, you'd pick the league. But it is having that feeling that they deserve. They deserve lifting the shiny thing. They've done more than enough to deserve it.
Definitely. And that's probably my only, my trepidation is that they don't get to lift the trophy because the media will put pressure on us because of that, but taking that away, I just think they do deserve something for what they've put in a lot, and Pochettino deserves it as well for what he's done, not just for Tottenham but for English football in general, and not just at Tottenham, at Southampton as well. 20 years into the future, I'd love him to be England manager. Note that I say 20 years. Yeah, it would be very, very disappointing not to. I'd love to win the FA Cup and finish second. If we can't win the league, that would be gives me so much pleasure.
Looking then at the fixtures that come, and you know the Chelsea game, and then it's off the back of that Palace away, then it's Arsenal at home. It's not an easy run of games going all the way through. Leicester versus Spurs. Leicester would love to stick one on Spurs, I suspect. Last game of the season's Hull away. They could be fighting for their absolute lives at that stage. It is probably going to be defined by the next three, the three leading into April. It is going to be the FA Cup semi, Palace away and Arsenal at home. If you can find a way to get 6 points from those two league games, it'll put enormous pressure at least on Chelsea.
Yeah, I think the important one is if we beat Palace and they win their next game, which might be Southampton at home.
I'll find out for you now.
Yeah.
Southampton at home, yeah. And then they go to Goodison Park.
I mean, you know, if they were to get a draw there and we win, you know, that gets it down to 2 points. I think we play before them. We played a North London derby. And then they play...
No, it's the other way around.
Is it?
Yeah, it's the other way around.
What's the one where we play first then?
They play both games before you. The following weekend, they're the Monday night game when they're at home to Middlesbrough.
Right, so that's the one where there's a big gap, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if we can win the next two, whatever they do, the important one will be if we can get it down to one, it just puts a whole new pressure on things, you know. So it'd be interesting to see how Chelsea also cope with these little bits of injuries that they're getting, which they haven't had all season, you know. Courtois, Alonso, I don't know whether it is illness or an injury. And Costa's not really playing that well. Hazard got shut down. But Chelsea are still a very dangerous side and Conte's still a very good manager.
Yeah, it's interesting yesterday that he moves Azpilicueta to accommodate Alonso being out. It's easy for us to, and Conte knows far more about football than we ever will, but I always feel if you can avoid a way of making two changes, you know what I mean? He's disrupted his back three and he's disrupted the wing-back position. Yeah. I always err on the side of, is there a way to do it where you don't disrupt, where you just get a like-for-like? He mustn't have felt that there was, and as I say, he knows far more about what he's doing than you or I do, and he's working with those players on a regular basis. But it is the first little bit of a chink, I think, in the armour. You were able to put the Palestine one as one of them, whereas this one feels a little bit like the manager, has he got a selection quite right, where the players properly at it? Are they suddenly looking a bit tired? Yeah. And he's taking the responsibility on himself and come out and said he didn't have the players right. So it does strike you that for the first time there, feels like more of a wobble than Palace.
The two games that are, you know, against Tottenham and against Man United, the team looked a shadow of its normal self when we beat them 2-0 at the Lane around January. But they came back from that after that, even though they looked totally inept in that game. So there's no reason why they can't do that again, even though, you know, everyone's going to have a bad one, and we had one against you. You know, everyone's going to have a bad one every now and again. So I don't want to read too much into it, but it's good that we're putting the pressure on, and the more pressure we put on is the more that weird things happen, you know, and that's the way I'm trying to look at it.
Okay, always good to speak to Paul Tierney, and we'll be talking to him again hopefully later this week, as I said before, before the semi-finals all come together. But I'm going to shoot over now, and we're going to find out about Watford, who got themselves a big 3 points yesterday. We should secure the safety for next season. Throw a few questions up about the manager. It's all very interesting stuff. I'm going to be speaking to Bradley Hayden in a second. I'm from Paul Tierney over to Bradley Hayden to talk about Watford, at Watford FC blog on the Twitter. Bradley, always good to speak to him about what's going on at Vicarage Road. And you're I'm intrigued by these sides, Bradley. I keep having chats to people on this show, the side sort of from 9th to 16th. It strikes me as an interesting thing that there's generally dissent around Puel at Southampton. There's generally dissent around Hughes at Stoke. There's a bit of dissent around Bilic at West Ham. And Marazzi now at Watford's done what you needed him to do. He's got the 40-point barrier. He's, you know, he's done it with six games to go. But I'd be surprised if he was Watford manager next year. Would you be?
I think the last six games is going to be interesting to see how he comes through. I think if he comes through the last six games and we come through with a decent points tally, I think he might still be here next year. If we come through the last six games and he kind of puts the mentality that, yeah, boys, you've done your job, you're on the beach now, and we don't really play that well, then I think maybe more questions will start to come about. But there's been a lot of conflicting reports, really, in the national media. There's been a lot of reports saying that Mazzarri is going to go at the end of the season, and there's been talk that Claudio Ranieri might be coming in. But in the local area, a lot of what's been coming out is that Mazzarri will be here after this season and for the next couple of seasons to come. So it's still interesting, and I think a lot of Watford fans are kind of disillusioned a bit at the minute about Mazzarri. I think we're pleased that that we are now pretty much safe. I think at the start of the month before the Sunderland game, all of the Watford fan base were worried, because after that Crystal Palace game,
yeah,
it looked like if any team that was going to be dragged into the relegation battle, it was going to be Watford. And with some tough fixtures after Sunderland and West Brom and Swansea, if we didn't win there, then we would probably be right at the heart of the battle at the minute. So the fact we've come through there with 9 points from a possible 12 is really pleasing, and we're now pretty much safe, and a lot of Watford fans are happy. I mean, I think some fans still have some doubts over Mazzarri. Some are still unhappy by the fact he still hasn't quite got to grips with the language, and he has made a few interesting decisions in games, but we have been playing a lot better since the turn of the month, so it's going to be interesting. I think at the minute, if we perform more in the last six games, I'd be happy to kind of give him the next couple of months, give him the summer to get put his stamp on the squad, to let him get in a couple more players, and let him work with the team and see how we go from there. But if we kind of tail off at the end of the season, then I do think a change of manager might happen. But it's very interesting at the minute, because there's a lot of conflicting reports, and it's a bit difficult to know whether he's staying or whether he will be going. So there's a lot of uncertainty among the Watford fan base at the minute about who's going to be here next season.
One of the things that struck me watching Watford this season, and I'll be honest, Bradley, they're probably the side I've seen the least of. Sometimes yeah, it just goes that way. It's just circumstances. And strangely this season, I don't feel like I've seen a lot of Watford play, so you may correct me very quickly. But one of the things that struck me is I'm not that sure what type of football that Watford play. Like, it appears to be changing game by game, yeah, and it appears to be both.
That's been one of the grievances of fans, yeah. I mean, that's been one of the main grievances of fans, to be honest, because there was a lack of style and a lack of a footprint on the squad, really. Some games we'd pass it around. Other games we'd just hoof it up to Deeney and Akaka if he was playing and let them get on with it. And that was the case from January onwards. That was the case, really. And you weren't really sure what Watford team was going to turn up. And recently we've been playing a lot better football and passing it around. We've been less focused with Deeney up front. We've been passing it around a bit and using the width of Niang and Amrabat and Kapu in the middle of the park a lot more. And one of the big improvements, really, in recent weeks has been the emergence of Abdoulaye Doucouré in the middle of the park, because of Alan Borami's injury. We've been playing Doucouré in the middle of the park, and he's kind of been like our little version of Kante, really, because he's been dictating play in the middle of that park, spraying it about, getting us moving forward as quickly as possible, but also doing the defensive side of the game very well as well. So you're right there, but there's not really been a style to this Watford squad this season. There's not really been a way of saying, yeah, this is the Watford way, because it's been chopping and changing each game, and the fans are really unsure how we're going to be playing as well. So it's going to be it's been one of the main grievances among this squad about the lack of style, because we've clearly got a very talented squad, but at the minute you're unsure about what Watford is going to turn up and how we're going to play. Is it going to be the team that beat Arsenal and Manchester United and performed well against West Brom? Or is it going to be the team that got thumped by Liverpool and got turned over by Crystal Palace a few weeks ago as well? So but you're right, that is one of the main grievances among fans, is that there has been a lack of style and a lack of cutting edge this Watford team this season.
On the other aspect of it as well, which sort of grabbed me again, looking from afar, so feel free to, you know, to disagree with me, but it doesn't look like he's blooded that many young lads. I expected, I think we spoke early in the season, I think you were very, very much of the view we'd see a lot of success this season.
Yes,
and
yeah.
And he gets in fits and starts, he comes off the bench, but he hasn't had a proper run of games either. And there's another couple of young prospects I know Watford are pretty excited about, and none of them have really got any run of games under Mazzarri. Yeah.
That was the case with Doucouré at the start of the season. I just mentioned at the start of the season, he came in against Chelsea, had a quick substitute appearance. He started against Gillingham in the cup, and then from then onwards, he was not involved in the actual team up until about January. And at the end of August, he was very close to securing a move back to Lorient, I think, in France, and that fell through right at the last minute. So Doucouré was kind of kicking his heels right the way through to the end of December, really. And then when we got a bit raft of injuries, he was kind of thrust into the kit team against Spurs. We lost 4-1, but he didn't play too badly. And from then onwards, the Corey's really flourished. And it's been the case for success as well. Success has been blighted with injuries, but then he also hasn't had much of a chance under Mazzarri. Sometimes he would come on and he would make a real big impact, and then he wouldn't really get into the side after that. He came and started against Spurs last week, didn't do too badly. His final ball was lacking a bit, but yeah, success is a very exciting prospect, and he was left on the bench at the weekend against Swansea, actually, and it was a bit of a strange decision that after an hour, Mazzarri withdrew Amrabat, who was playing left wing, and brought on Cavaselli, a defender, and we switched formation and went to a 3-5-2 instead of a 4-2-3-1, when perhaps the more obvious switch would have been to bring on a Success or an Okaka, a more forward-thinking player, to kind of kill off Swansea, who were sitting back and not really, for a team that were fighting for their lives really down at the relegation zone, they didn't really cause us too many problems, and if we wanted to, we could have probably scored a couple more goals. So it has been a shame not to see Success so much this season. When he's come on off the bench, he's largely impressive, and with his pace he can cause a lot of fullbacks a lot of problems, because you don't really know what he's going to do next, and he's one of those players that fullbacks just don't like to play against. So it has been a shame that we haven't really seen a lot of success this season, but hopefully from next season, if he gets a good pre-season under his belt, we might see a bit more of him next season.
Next one on this as well, and it's interesting, you know, the manager mentions about the playing with the same formation after his game on Saturday against Swansea. Is Deeney's had a bit of a strange season as well. He's been so important in the past, but he's not really settled into the sort of disruptive form, i.e. disrupting opponents form, that you've seen in seasons gone by. I'm not going to say it looks like he's lost his edge, because he's clearly a very focused, intense individual, but he's just not quite managed to be quite the player he was last season.
No, yeah. At home, he's had a good record recently. He's been scoring a few goals at home. But yeah, it's up till probably about December time, Deeney went for a long spell without scoring, and that was part of the reason why Watford did go off the ball a bit before Christmas. We weren't scoring goals enough. And Deeney's form was a bit hit and miss. But from January onwards, he's been scoring goals regularly. I mean, recently there's been a few reports of a rift between Mazzari and Deeney. I don't know whether you've seen them, but he was benched against Sunderland because he hadn't trained for the first week during the international break because of an illness. But in the second week, in the build-up to the game, Deeney was apparently training. And interestingly, Mazzari dropped into the bench against Sunderland, and Stefano Kaka led the line, and he played pretty well. And then Deeney came in against West Brom, scored a good goal. And then against Spurs, he was left on the bench because of fatigue, Mazzari was saying. And if there's one player that you think would not be accused of being fatigued, and that'd be Deeney, because he's one that's always seems to be fit and hasn't really had too many injuries over the past few seasons. And after the game, Deeney was apparently quite annoyed by the fact that he was left out of the team, and he didn't really speak to any of the media because he didn't want to say the wrong thing, which I can kind of understand. But you can obviously see that Deeney isn't happy about being dropped. But then there is, on the flip side of it, as well as being an important player, there is no player that's bigger than the club. So it's interesting to see that there has been a couple of grumblings of discontent between our captain Deeney and the manager, and that has been another question among the fan base. It is Mazzari losing the squad? Because there's been other reports when there's been reports of Mazzari who's been linked with being moved on in the season. There's been reports that the players are not happy with the way he's maybe communicating and finding it difficult to understand what he wants. There's been some reports of that as well. So that there's been kind of a little room is that there is a bit of unrest among the squad. But I mean, Deeney's form hasn't really showed. He's been playing okay. I mean, at the weekend he didn't have the best game in his career, but he has been scoring on a regular basis at home, certainly since January. So I mean, hopefully he can get a few goals to his name towards the end of the season, because we're going to need his goals, because we've got a very tough running. So if there's one player we need to be scoring in the running, it needs to be Troy Deeney.
Okay, always great to speak to Bradley, and it was excellent before as well with both Paul and Steve. It's been an excellent 50-50 football this week. Hope you've had a fabulous time, and the games are only going to get bigger and bigger as we look towards the FA Cup semi-finals next weekend.